Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
You ready to roll?
Sure.
Good, because we're rolling. I don't think I sent you notes, but we're rolling.
That's fine.
I was just listening to Laura Ingraham.
Why?
Why? I knew you'd say that. Because
that's why
I am
you asked,
a, because
sure.
I
that's
like
why you said it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'm a consummate talk radio professional and I give a fucking goddamn shit about radio and want to see what the fuck these other fucking people are doing out there.
You don't sound like a consummate talk radio professional when you talk like that.
I know. I was just reading the latest Broadcast Supply Worldwide catalog. Did you get yours today?
No, but I didn't check the mail today, so.
There's new ads for their Cuss Dump 9001, and it's got the interface on it. I think this is just for the ad, but it's like a telephone, and it's got an icon of a lady on one line, an icon of a man on another line, and one.
Are they
just
yelling at each other?
No, one that's on hold is just the finger's about to press to let on is like it's like one of those old timey anarchist bombs from from cartoons, the round bomb with the big wick on it. Mm. Like, that's his head. It's just that with an F on it. Like, the F-bomb
is about to be dumped.
No, he's about to be on the air, and you gotta have these dump, fucking cuss dump things to fucking dump him.
Yeah, well, knock on wood, but we haven't had to use ours yet.
We also haven't really fucking taken any fucking calls, but I think we
well, you originally were more worried about us having let a few F-bombs explode.
Yeah, I'm not worried anymore. Radio professional, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've taken the concept of register. So when you're on the radio, you know that you don't say naughty words. Because
register?
The FCC. Register.
Is that a term?
Yes, like, it is.
What you use when you talk to your...
You speak to different people in different registers. And we've talked about that before.
I talk to everyone the same all the time. And when I meet your child, I'm going to say, hey, what the fuck's up, you fucking kid?
No, you don't. Okay. You talk to your radio audience differently than you talk to your podcast.
Hi, I'm broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. Yeah. Bunker!
No, there's nothing wrong with it. People think that makes you fake or something, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
No.
I think whenever you're talking to somebody, you should know your audience, and it's a very good thing, a very professional thing, to tailor your words to that audience. It's smart. It's not fake.
You can just call me Archie Bunker.
That's your new nickname. That's your new rap name.
Archie Bunker. That would be Archie'd be a good nickname. Yeah.
Yeah, but then people might think you're a racist. That's racist.
Yeah. That guy hates all races.
You know what's not racist, though, is people in Colorado kicking out Senator, what's her name? Hiron. Yes, she tried to say it was because of racism, but no, it was because
John Morse, man. Yeah. He looks whiter than me. He looks so white. If I met him, I'd be like, "What's up, Peckerwood?" He looks so fucking white, man.
Is that the racial slur for white people?
It's Peckerwood. One of them. Peckerwood.
Is it?
Yeah, cracker. Huh. And then there's cracker, which means slave.
Yeah, I know cracker.
Whip cracker. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Cracker knocking. That's what we used to do back in the day.
Knock on white people's
somebody's
doors.
Door and run away.
You brown people would do that? Really? You called it cracker knocking?
No, we didn't.
That's funny.
We called it N-word knocking. But
I didn't know what N-word knock. I'd never heard that word in my life, except in a Dead Kennedy song. N-word knocking for the master race is the line in California Uber Alles. But I thought it meant beating on brown people. I didn't know it meant ditching and dinging with the doorbell. Until like a neighbor on my block told me that someone was N-word knocking him, and I was like, I don't know what that is.
I guess the PC term is doorbell ditching, which also has alliteration.
Ding
so
and ditch, yeah.
You don't lose too much.
I don't have my doorbell doesn't
see,
work.
I was doing
I
it
disconnected
with,
my doorbell so so people couldn't come to my door anyway, so
see, the only time I really did it was with my black friends when I lived in this ghetto apartment complex in Baytown. And they called it that, so I called it that, and I didn't really think much of it.
Yeah, that doesn't happen much here. Also, I'm like usually, you know, standing really close, awake, near my door with a gun in my hand. So, you know, it's not a good idea. Not that I'm going to shoot you if you do it, but the other day I heard somebody bang like once on my front door. It was broad daylight. I was in the living room and I looked out the door and there were these two little girls like 10 years old, like walking past my house. And I went out there and they were giggling and I was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I don't know why I did that. I was just like being the cranky old man. And,
you get old.
And my neighbor was sitting across the street, like working on his car, and he was looking at me and he waved at me. And I went over and talked to him. I was like, did you see those girls throw something at my house? And he was like, "No, I heard it though." And, and I was like all righteous indignation for yelling at these little girls. And then I was like looking around my yard for something else later. And I found like a big dead bird in my yard. So like these little girls didn't do shit. It was like a bird fucking hit my window and died. And I was like, damn,
but you were going
shaking
nuclear.
My fist at them. Yeah.
You were going all John McCain on them.
I did not have a gun on me. I did not, you know, I didn't run out. I saw it was two little girls. I didn't run out there. Mm-hmm. Then they ambushed me with machine guns.
How'd you get out of that pickle?
I don't have pickle. Right. How will our hero get out of this?
Pickle. Yeah. You have the warning that this is the Wednesday podcast and not the talk radio show, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to go at the
Fuck
beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody hearing this that might want to give me a job. They're like, hey.
Yeah.
What are you guys talking about? You dropped the N word, the F word. You guys are
Nima's
going
looking,
crazy.
Nima's doing his bi-monthly looking for jobs, looking for
bi-monthly.
New jobs. Which, you know.
Yeah.
You're a hard man to satisfy, but you're very good at getting jobs and keeping them, but then you quit them for better jobs.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes worse jobs. Depends. But yeah, I'm still playing the field, I guess. I took a wife early, but
I took a wife. That's
when it comes
so biblical,
to careers,
man.
I'm still playing the field.
I'm going to take me a wife.
I went a courting
and took me a wife. You sound like someone who would be living in Wyoming in about 1870. I'm going to go down to Cheyenne and go a courting and take me a wife.
Like I'm a sheep shearer.
Yeah. Yeah. You're tired of shearing the sheep. Is that what you kids are calling it these days?
If you want, yeah. You can call it whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah, you're looking for jobs. You're going on vacation this weekend. You're gonna go. You're gonna go play golf with Obama in the Bahamas.
Yeah, yeah. And we chose that location because of the rhyme. And you know, that's a place the president's really into. So I think it'll be a good time.
The story I'm going to tell is that the reason Ben Stone is filling in for you both days this weekend is because you went golfing with Obama in the Bahamas and you got to talking and he didn't like some things you said. And then you're in the FEMA camp or you're in Gitmo and they won't let you go because you refused to sign the social contract.
Well, then how are we going to explain when I get back that I got out of the FEMA camp?
We're going to say that everyone in Colorado got together and voted you out. Let's talk about that. Okay, here's one reason. The reason I was listening to radio is there's a very good chance that the Fiends are going to be on an as yet undisclosed new talk radio station, possibly in Casper, which is kind of weird to me. It's kind of like I've always dug the anonymity. I guess it's still anonymous because, you know, it's radio. It doesn't have my face. And I claim to not be in Casper. I claim to be in Beast Lick, Wyoming in a windowless bunker and say that I only come into Casper three times a year in the covered wagon or the dog sled to get supplies at the Walmart.
Mm-hmm. But it's kinda, the sheep wagon.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to me the thought that, like, my neighbors might hear it and recognize it and go, "I heard you on the radio and I don't like what you said." It's weird, man.
Yeah, well, because that's one of the great things about our radio show is it's unrestrained by, I don't know, worrying about the social norms.
Yeah.
We eschew all of these kinds of standards of common morality in the search for actual morality and philosophy. And sometimes people don't take too kindly to that. So, but hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, well, we, I mean, we've kind of lived in a vacuum too. We're on 10 stations now and like we haven't really like dealt with feedback. Also in that I just found out that our, like we never give out the talk number, because we weren't live on a lot of stations. Now we're live on three of them. We, you know, we're delayed on most of them, so we didn't give it out. And the other day I went to give it out, or had we tested to give it out, and I realized that, the talk, our phone number that we use for taking calls, the GCN line that the Fiends use, doesn't work or isn't connected. And they're fixing it, and hopefully it'll be up by this weekend or next weekend. But
yeah,
literally, like, you know, people have tried to call in. They emailed us. They're like, yeah, I can't call into your show. So we've just been blabbing our opinion to all these people and, like, not heard anything back from them. We've kind of lived in this safety of, like, well, fuck the world.
Well, we hear feedback on the website and the chat room, but it's all people friendly. Who've loved us since the podcast days. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few flame wars, but they're few and far between. And it's usually about stuff we stick fast to and appreciate the conversation sometimes.
Yeah, and it's usually like anarchists fighting over something like what color of cat they like better or something.
What color of cat do you like, Michael?
Mm. It's all pink on the inside.
Oh, man. You didn't have to go there.
So I was listening to Laura Ingraham because, you know, yeah. she's on this talk station. I was checking out the station we might be on. And we don't cuss. We don't talk about it's all pink on the inside. We don't do that on the radio, as our disclaimer says at the beginning of this, if anyone's listening. So if anyone's listening to our popular podcast, this is not the radio show. This is the podcast. So. Yeah, I was listening to her to kind of like check out the competition and also, you know, see how the radio station sounded, see how they format their ads and their show hour and their breaks and stuff. But also just kind of seeing like what the rock stars of talk radio are up to. And, you know, I agree. The thing is, like, those people, I agree with them like 30% of the time, like 100%. I can't argue with anything they say. And then they start going off on some other shit. And I'm like, oh, man, don't you get it? But it was interesting today because they actually mentioned a guest that we interviewed before a lot of people did. Victor Head, the guy who he was mentioned. They didn't interview him. They didn't, you know, it's a status show and they want the face of it. So like they didn't interview the guy who made it happen. They interviewed like the guy who took his place in the recall election, you know. They interviewed the Republican winner.
Yeah, yes, the winner. The new politician. Meet the new boss kind of a thing.
Yeah. And then she, you know, she talked about how great all of this was and then went off and talked about how Obama's being weak on the international stage by letting Russia take care of our problems with Syria by holding their nuclear, their weapons, their chemical weapons. And I was just like,
I've heard people come at it from that angle too, and maybe we should get into that a little bit later. But do we want to stick to the Colorado thing for now?
Yeah,
I have some comments on people saying things like, "Oh, Russia's bailing us out. That means the Russians are the powerful."
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think that's what's going on at all.
Yeah, absolutely. You had me at Kenley. Yes,
Kenley. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the Colorado thing. So, here's where I feel weird about the whole thing. I'm cheering that this happened, and as an anarchist, that makes me feel funny. It's almost like, wait, the politics worked for a minute. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, the will of the people, I guess, has been expressed, and so that's cool, you know, and I'll take it. It's better than if the recall election was lost in the sense that the same people who put these gun-grabbing laws into effect were still in office. I mean, that would obviously be worse. You know, it doesn't make me go back and say, huh, maybe political action can save the world, because we're not talking about the world being saved here. We're talking about one slim piece of freedom perhaps being ceded back. I mean, as far as I know, the law is still in place, isn't it? Yeah. So all that happens is you have a few seats that have changed. So you have the musical chairs continuing. And I don't know. I don't, I don't really know what the count was, but I doubt that it was a two-person difference in the vote, that it was that slim of a margin. So I don't think having two new people in the Colorado legislature is going to really allow them to go back and repeal these laws.
I think what it'll do is make politicians not run on gun-grabby things. They'll just wait till after they're elected to do gun-grabby things.
Well, that's what one of the beauties of this thing is, though, is that they already did win. You know, that's what a recall is. Yeah. They thought they were safe and sound, like that song, but they weren't.
Yeah, yeah. I went to look at that lady Perón. Is that her name?
Hiron.
Yeah,
Angela Hiron.
I looked at her Facebook page. I wanted to see if she said anything about it, and she hasn't posted on there for about a week. I think she saw this coming and just hid in her windowless, smoke-free bunker.
She's crying in her bathtub.
Yeah, with armed guards probably outside again.
Yeah. So
wouldn't it be bizarre if one of these ousted politicians went on a shooting spree?
It would be awful, but be awful. No, that's the thing is they don't commit their own atrocities or own violence. That's the thing is they want other people to do their dirty work for them. That's why they became politicians. They want to be the shot callers for the gang of thieves that is the state.
Yep. And I want to have Victor Head back on the show at some point because
he won.
I talked to him today and told him I could either do it this weekend. Because we're going to have some space to fill since Nima's going to be playing golf with Obama in the Bahamas. I told him we could do it this weekend or we could wait 2 or 3 or 4 weeks until we get on the station that's going to be putting us on in Pueblo, where he lives, and in Colorado Springs, which reaches into Denver. And he said he would prefer that. So he wants to be on the hometown radio and he's willing to wait to do it. So. Cool. Mm. And also, he's probably getting mobbed with interview requests right now. And in 3 weeks,
He's a hot commodity now.
He'll be back to being a plumber. He's a plumber and borrowed money from his grandmother to do this this campaign. I think that's pretty cool, man.
That's sweet of her.
Kickstarted it. As opposed to, we got to play the kickstart World War III. Well, let's finish our discussion on Colorado, but that kickstart World War III thing is about the funniest shit I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And it doesn't rely too much on visuals, so I think it'll be fine for the radio format.
Absolutely.
Or the podcast
format. It has cussing, so we'll do it on the today.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
Does it have cussing? Maybe. We'll do it live. Probably. Fuck it. We'll do it live. You want to do it now or you got more on Colorado?
No, okay. So the thing about feeling funny like an anarchist is in the Yahoo story, it talks about how this is highlighting the schism in Colorado between the carpetbagger and Denverite liberals who are anti-gun but pro-pot. So they all need to just sit down and watch our movie, Guns and Freedom. I think that'd help everybody. But it highlights this schism. And, you know, there is a burgeoning secession movement in northeastern Colorado. And you had brought up the idea that maybe this is a good thing to explain or elucidate the fact that politics won't get you anywhere. Maybe it'll make us some newly minted anarchists or libertarians out of this when they realize that they won't be allowed to secede. And all of this worked. This is such a huge victory for Victor Head and the free citizens of Pueblo and all the people who wanted to have their freedoms back or this little piece of freedom back. But in the end, what's really going to change? And maybe they'll realize that, hey, it's not about chipping away at these leaves and clipping the leaves with a nail clipper, which is kind of what this amounts to. But there needs to be a bigger paradigm shift. And maybe even the fact that this is a big victory, but it didn't in the end do much to further the cause of liberty, even that, I think, is a good teaching moment for people.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly didn't think that that this would win. I'm kind of happily surprised.
I predicted. I don't think I predicted it on the air, but I had a feeling that it was going to. It still is awesome. I mean, it was still a great piece of news to see. And you know, I guess it's not the principled idealist in me that's so happy about the fact that these people lost their jobs, but there's some essence of me that's
You're not happy these people lost their jobs?
Oh, I am. I am, but it's in kind of a vindictive way. I don't know if it's so healthy, but I feel like, yeah, that's what you get. You lose your job over this. It feels good, you know, like there's at least a tiny bit of accountability in this case, in this one tiny case, as opposed to, you know, people in the White House and in D.C. who commit atrocities all day long and never face accountability. But, yeah.
Yeah. 9-11. You there?
How do you mean?
Yeah, it's 9-11, man.
Oh,
you're such an anarchist, you don't even notice. I only know because I spend all day calling radio stations and I sit on hold and I listen to Rush going, and it's 9-11 and it's a wonderful day to reflect on the glory that is America and Muslims are bad, okay? I don't know if Rush said that. Somebody, I was listening to some talk show host when I was on hold several times today.
Yeah.
And these stations all play the same, you know, eight guys and one woman. So it's like, you know, if you're making calls between, you know, 8 a.m. and 1 p.m., you're hearing the same shows over and over on hold.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a long time, and I don't think it should be something that gets forgotten by history. But I think it's a ripe opportunity for some revisionist history, even though it's not even that long ago for revisionist history. But I think the lessons that people need to take away from it are different from the lessons that the people who cry and talk about and don't ever forget and that kind of thing want you to take away from it. They seem to want you to take away the thing that it's a dangerous world and the U.S. or Washington, D.C. needs to project its power even more to prevent this from happening, and torturing and bombing people is what prevented more 9-11s from happening. And I don't think that's the case at
all. The weird disconnect, too, is that and I'm not going to just pick on right-wing talk show hosts. Let's just say conservative, you know, typical conservatives, if I can be collectivist with them. And I really don't want to pick on right-wing or any talk show host right now, because there was this kind of unseating in the radio industry this week. There's this network called, well, let's not even say the name of it. There's a network out there that has some talk show hosts on it, and apparently they're having financial troubles and laid some people off and may not have paid some hosts in a while. And one of their kind of big name hosts, it's not one of the top tier, you know, it's not Rush, it's not those people, but it's like the people one tier down from him in popularity and number of stations they're on. the guy was like ranting on his show the other day about what's wrong with the talk radio industry. His network cut him off mid-sentence and put on like a best of show from him, like from 2 weeks ago when he was happy.
And then he's
not on the air anymore. Although
mid-sentence,
I spent a lot of time in the last 2 days calling stations that program a certain show in our block on Sundays and Saturdays and saying, hey, if you need anything, you can put us on.
Yeah. How's that been going? Are people still waiting on them to come back or what?
Maybe not. I don't know. Basically told me.
We don't want to get into too much of inside baseball, I guess.
Yeah. But we don't want to get too much inside baseball, because apparently it can get you, you know, they'll just like turn my podcast off right now and it'll go. They'll replace it with Back When We Were Happy.
Best of Fiends. Yeah. Well, we have the random loop, so they just replace it with the streaming loop.
With the fucking goddamn shit, motherfucker, piss, cunt, shit loop. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that won't happen.
No.
See, we don't cuss on the radio show, and we just save it up and do it all now.
I don't think I cussed yet.
Fucking cuss, it's, Nima.
I don't want to.
Pussy. 9-11.
Yeah.
Here, I'll cuss. Schumer, Clinton, Schumer, Feinstein.
Take the panties off, you ain't no nun.
George
Shit.
Bush. No, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you don't know what George Bush is?
No, you're take your panties off, you ain't no nun.
Shit.
What's
that? Kendrick Lamar line.
Of course it is.
Yeah, Ken Lamar.
9-11.
All right. Do we want to play this Obama?
Yeah. It's
because Obama.
It's 3 minutes and 45 seconds, but it's worth playing. Let's play it and then take a break and come back. You can start your break now or sit and laugh at it. Here you go.
I got it. I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead-ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the U.S. government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.
World War III is a very important, very progressive war that Obama tells me is very important. So it must be.
When I first saw the president speak in 2008 in a YouTube clip posted to my Facebook page, I knew he was going to be right all the time. So I support World War III and IV and any moon war the president may want to start.
I mean, there is no way that he or the cabal of corporate interests, spy agencies, and shadow bankers that tell him what to do would ever mislead us.
The $1.6 trillion that we raise will help create a war that truly puts the liberal in neoliberal. There will be millions of troops, thousands of organic grass-fed bombs, hybrid Prius tanks, rockets controlled by iPads, and drones that play the Lumineers while they attack.
World War III is not going to be like those other Republican wars fought on just 1% of the world. This war is going to be fought in 99% of the world.
It'll be everywhere. Russia, China, Africa, Cincinnati, your favorite brunch spot, the one with those kick-ass ranchero breakfast burritos.
Everywhere.
World War III will also be the most social media-focused war ever. It'll be all over Twitter, Facebook, Vine, Pinterest, and whatever eventually replaces Pinterest. And I mean, just think of all the hilarious gifs we can make of cats reacting to their owners' homes being obliterated.
Lots of shock, but tons of aww.
And come on, guys, how good will Michelle's arms look in sleeveless army fatigues?
We have a lot of great rewards for our donors. If you donate $10 to the World War III Project, you'll get a shout-out on social media.
Hashtag thank you.
A $25 donation will get you a piece of rubble from a war-torn Middle Eastern country kissed by Senator Lindsey Graham.
A $100 donation gets you a day pass to leave your local refugee camp.
You'll probably end up in a refugee camp, but it'll have free Wi-Fi.
And a $10 million donation gets you your own senator for a year.
So please, help us reach our goal of $1.6 trillion so we can make World War III a reality. Why? Because Obama.
Because Obama.
What?
Yeah, like at the end. At the, end.
The white kid is like
drones
what?
That play the Lumineers. I
don't
love
know.
That.
I don't know what that is.
The Lumineers. They're like hip country band? Folk crossover band. Yeah, hipsters like them. They're pretty good. Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. Because Obama.
I think that should be the title of this episode. Because Obama. Because I don't have a title yet, and that's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah.
Did you, did you notice at the very end of that, there's kind of like a really subtle punchline? It says,
"Oh yeah,
paid for by the by Coke Industries."
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I can't tell if that's a joke of like the Coke brothers would do that to denigrate liberals, or if the Coke brothers would profit off that war, or both.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess that's why it's such a great punchline.
Yeah.
You can take it either way and it's funny.
I take it either way.
Personal
I take it
preference.
Both ways.
Yeah, yeah. speaking of the Syria war and accountability, since we were talking about the recall election, here's a cool headline in Politico. The Wall Street Journal op-ed writer, Elizabeth Obagi, was fired for a lie. Unfortunately, it wasn't too much accountability because she wasn't fired for lying about Syria, which she should have been. But at least they fired her for lying. She apparently lied about having a PhD, and so she actually got kicked off of the Institute for the Study of War, which was a think tank promoting war. And it was an op-ed piece that was cited by Kerry and McCain during congressional hearings.
A think tank promoting war?
Yeah, apparently. Or but the study of war. But I'm sure that that's what they're doing. That's what they were doing here with the Syria stuff.
There's one of those in 30 Rock. When Jack tries to back that lunatic Tea Party candidate for some Senate spot.
Oh, yeah.
And then ends up having to, like, chop up his video to make it say other stuff because he was just too nutty even for the Republicans.
That's right.
It's at the end of the ad, it says, paid for by the committee to reinvade Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. It's just sad how the war party is just still not giving up. And I think Justin Raimondo put it that, you know, we beat the war party, you know, meaning the people who are anti-war, which is most of the people in the country. But then the caveat is for now. And the march to war might be a leisurely stroll at this point. But there are still people who really, really want it. And Obama himself has even backtracked a little bit on about the Kerry gaffe and the Russia thing.
About the time we're releasing this episode, Obama's going to be giving his heartfelt speech to America, trying to convince them. And if anything good...
Another one? I thought he did one Tuesday night.
I think there's one tonight. And if anything good has come out of this, it's that I've been screaming for years since Obama came into office, where's the anti-war left? Well, they've come back. They're out
some
there.
Of them have. Some of them have.
The rest of them are just like, because Obama.
Because
so let's go to the market and then come back and talk about how Obama gonna buy me a war and how basically they're bribing soldiers with iPhones.
This is really good. Yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to FreedomFiends.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll show you the difference between leadership and authority and how to eliminate the demand for authority while remaining peaceful and even calm. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
So, Nima.
Yeah.
Obama gonna buy me a war.
Keep Obama in president, y'all know. He bought me a war. Oh, and a cell phone for the war. Yeah. That was what you came back with when I sent you this story. And it didn't click for me at first. But then I went back and read the quote that I had pulled out of the story. And I was like, it's because of the cell phone. And yeah, so this is actually reported by BBC News, their Middle East division. The headline is...
Okay, wait, that's the name of the episode, Obama Gonna Buy Me a War. That's better. Definitely. Than Because Obama. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Because Obama could be the subtitle.
Yeah.
Headline is Syria hostage Domenico Curico treated like an animal. And the caption on the photograph of him after he achieved his freedom from being basically a war prisoner of the Syrian rebels, various Syrian rebel factions, says Mr. Quirico says that paradoxically he was treated with most humanity when held by Al-Qaeda. Because apparently that was one of the groups that he was bounced around to. And he was an Italian journalist. And I think just a few days after he crossed the border from Lebanon, was captured by Syrian rebels and imprisoned. And I guess he was a prisoner of theirs for 5-6 months. Luckily, he was able to avoid getting his liver or heart or any of his other organs eaten by any of the rebels.
Does that happen?
Yeah, that happens. Yeah, there's a YouTube video of it.
I don't want to see that. Stuff.
No, I don't want to see it either. It's enough to know that other people have seen it. And he has this quote that really helps to shed light on both who these people are and also, to me, it's a microcosm of what the state really is. Because what these rebel groups are fighting for is control of the state apparatus. They want the monopoly of violence, and they don't have one right now. So they're going to keep committing violence until they are the victors.
Obama going to buy them the monopoly of violence.
Apparently. At least that's what they're banking on. And banking is the appropriate word. Here is the quote from the Italian journalist after he was free. He says, "Our captors were from a group that professed itself to be Islamist, but that in reality is made up of mixed up young men who have joined the revolution because the revolution now belongs to these groups that are midway between banditry and fanaticism. They follow whoever promises them a future, gives them weapons, gives them money to buy cell phones, computers, clothes. Such groups," he said, "were trusted by the West, but were in truth profiting from the revolution to, quote, take over territory, hold the population ransom, kidnap people, and fill their pockets." Yeah. So this is it, man. I mean, this is the root of what states are and how statism has its origin in groups of bandits who decided, well, let's just stick around rather than roaming and pillaging at will. Let's just stay in this one pillage town and we'll just extract tribute from them on a yearly or monthly or whatever the basis is. And you can see it here. In Syria now, that's what these groups want to end up being. They want control of the people of Syria. And it's because the fighters there, the average rank and file here in the Syrian rebellion, according to this Italian journalist, is motivated not by religion or ideology or even really politics. You know, I've heard some people say things like, well, in the Middle East, it's all just religious fanaticism and politics is tied in with that. And it's all the same thing over there. But those are just... those are like the stories on the back of a bag of chips or food from Whole Foods. Those are just nice narratives to whitewash what's really going on. And what really is going on is these are just people that want power, money, resources, and have no qualms about using violence to get them. And like this guy says, what they really want, money to buy cell phones, computers, and clothes.
Yeah, I sent you a couple quotes. Did you read these? It sounds like they're redistributing the wealth over there.
Yeah. He also said guards seem to take no interest in anything other than money and weapons, spending entire days lounging on mattresses, smoking, and watching old black and white Egyptian movies or American wrestling shows on television. He says these men took satisfaction from seeing what they would regard as two rich Westerners reduced to the status of beggars. Yes. He also says, you know, when I talked about the picture of him, and he says, you know, paradoxically, or the picture's caption says, paradoxically, the best treatment he got was from the Al-Qaeda guys. He elaborates on that by saying it was because they seemed to have had prisoners before, and they had some kind of code or history of how they dealt with prisoners. So they dealt with prisoners a very specific way, whereas the non-Al-Qaeda, I guess, affiliated groups were just I guess, amateurs, just opportunists, and did pretty much whatever they wanted. He faced mock executions at least twice that he mentions, where, you know, guns were pointed at his head, things like that. Just horrible torture, because that really is torture, is making somebody think and have that fear that they're going to die very soon.
I'm picturing the amateurs just not having any idea what to do with prisoners. And it's kind of like, I'm not really picturing myself having prisoners. I guess I'm picturing myself having guests that I don't really know or want to talk to. Like, I don't know. Yeah, go in that room and here's a bag of chips. Leave me alone, you know?
Yeah,
they didn't take their soldiering seriously, and I'm not saying Al-Qaeda are good because they did, but I'm saying like they sounded like they had a little more experience and they were more professional, as people like to say.
Well, yeah, but it kind of helps to put evidence in the slot that this really is just a mess. And if you remove Assad, who is a brutal dictator, who really has no right to do anything that he's doing as far as the atrocities. But if you remove him, then what you're going to have is all of these people who are already committed to using violence in these ways. And that's really their only concern, is to take what they want through violence. You're going to have all these groups unleashed, and they're going to be fighting for a very long time until one establishes dominance. And it's going to be the beginning of the Syrian civil war compared to what we've seen so far, if the cruise missiles, the Tomahawks start falling.
Yeah. I got a nice segue, unless you got more on this.
No, that's what I had wanted to say about this.
You could finish up, and I could still do the segue.
Go for your segue, homie.
Speaking of mock executions, I saw the movie Argo the other day. And have you seen it? You had an opinion.
No, I made that caveat, because I made fun of it on the show before, but I have said I haven't seen it, so I take my musings with a grain of salt.
Well, have you seen The Newsroom? You made fun of that, too.
Yes, I make fun of that, but okay. I saw about half an episode of The Newsroom. And you say the thing that bugged me most they've stopped doing, which was that they said S-O-T.
You know what? I don't think they have, now that I think about it, because I'm watching them all over again. Okay, a couple interesting things about that. One is the storyline in season one was that basically they had a guy from the NSA be a whistleblower and come to them and say, the spying on Americans is far vaster than you ever imagined, and I have proof. And then he's found dead, allegedly. Well, the story is that he rode his bicycle to the middle of a bridge and jumped off into the river, East River, and killed himself. But who knows if, you know, it was really suicide or not. But it was very interesting because it was basically – it was an older guy than Edward Snowden, and it was an older black dude, and he basically was Edward Snowden, and this is before Edward Snowden was any household name. The plot line in season two is that they do a story that a whistleblower came to them, and they do a story that the U.S. used sarin gas in Afghanistan. And there's proof before any of this came out about the sarin gas. It's either a very bizarre coincidence or there's some kind of conspiracy. And in the timeline of this universe, the NSA thing was true and the sarin thing was false. And they basically broadcast like the story of the year and then found out they'd been punked.
Yeah, that is strange, but I mean, those are issues that have been
on the table,
on the radar for a while, because the Syrian rebels were accused. No, sorry. Assad was accused of doing a chemical attack a year ago. That's why one of the reasons the UN inspectors were in Syria at the time of this most recent alleged chemical attack was because about a year ago, you know, and it's happened a few times to where the Syrians, the rebels have pointed to Assad and said he's using chemical weapons, and they had been debunked at one point by the Russians. You know, the Russians are out there putting out reports showing that they are pointing to the rebels being behind this kind of stuff and showing different types of evidence like the fact that the chemicals they've been receiving allegedly are amateur type stuff, you know, it's not military grade type stuff, and they have like components and parts and are supposed to put them together.
Okay, so back to the newsroom. Your problem with Aaron Sorkin is that he uses SOT. He says SOT instead of SOT, which is abbreviation for sound on tape. It's an it's a news term or a TV term for a clip, basically, right?
Yeah, and you know the other thing is it just really didn't catch. It didn't grab me. You know, it didn't grab me like Breaking Bad grabbed me or Hell on Wheels grabbed me. So if it had grabbed me, I would probably overlook that and continue to watch it and be able to comment on it in a more enlightened fashion. But
I have a theory of why he says SOT because I'm thinking about it now. And actually, I think he used that in his show Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip and his show Newsnight or Sports Night or whatever his other behind the scenes TV show was. Aaron Sorkin has been in TV forever. And if he says SOT instead of SOT, it's one of two, it's not a fucking accident. It's one of two things. It's either, it's an East Coast thing and you've never worked in New York and they say SOT or SOT instead of SOT. Okay. Or he just believes it should be SOT and he's trying to change it by doing that.
Okay.
And you kind of have to watch more than a half an episode of him to get his, like, deserved arrogance, you know? He's amazing. He's an amazing writer. He's a really, really, really amazing writer. You have to have a little bit of suspension of statism to enjoy his stuff because it all kind of exists in this – like every show he's done basically exists in this world where people are trying to improve TV and improve the world, and it's this like – you know, like the beginning of the newsroom, like the graphics at the beginning show Cronkite and they show what's the guy that took down I got a picture of him right here. Can't remember his name. The guy that took down the commie guy. Come on, man. Help me out here, world.
Edward R. Murrow.
Someone call in if you know. Yeah,
it's Edward R. Murrow.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Murrow. You know, it's basically Sorkin lives in a world where he wants to be Murrow and Cronkite and that people like that could actually exist in cable news.
Okay.
And they don't.
Okay. Maybe that's why it didn't grab me. But okay, fantasy is fantasy. So
yeah.
Maybe I'll give it another try, but I'm still too enthralled with Breaking Bad right now.
Well, it's going to be over forever.
I don't have a lot of time to watch TV, so really I can only focus on one series at a time.
Breaking Bad's going to be over for fucking ever in 3 weeks, so you'll have time.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You got me there.
Yeah.
So if it is a thing where it's a regional thing, then fine. But if it's a thing where he thinks that that's how it should be pronounced, I would still take exception to that because my point was it obviously should be SOT, not SOT, because newsroom time is of the essence when you're in a newsroom. And you're not going to waste the time to say three syllables when you could obviously just say one.
So, my belief is that it's probably a regional thing, and in New York, it's probably the other thing, my guess. You know, okay. I was actually thinking maybe we should try to interview him on the radio show at some time. Like next time he's doing a junket, contact his people. He might do it.
All right.
You know?
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun.
And that'd be our first question.
Yeah, I'd probably have to watch more than half an episode.
You could say, I worked as a newscaster in Casper, Wyoming, and we don't say it. I know you big New Yorkers think you might do something right that we know better, but...
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just one station that they said that. It was the university I went to, which had faculty who'd worked all over the country. And it was also I interned at our 24-hour news station here in Austin, which used to be called News 8 Austin. Now it's called YNN, Your News Now, and Washington State. And the thing about newsrooms is people end up there from all over the country. And so I don't know if I've ever worked anybody from the East Coast, except for the weather guy at Wyoming was from Connecticut, and he said SOT too. So – I don't know, man. Maybe New York's different, but I hadn't heard it.
Well, I did a computer kill Flanders search on Google of Sorkin newsroom. Why do they pronounce SOT as S-O-T? Let's see what they say.
Yeah, S-O-T. I think I tried that too, and I found other people complaining too.
yeah, but I don't have an answer. I can't find an answer.
Yeah, quickly. Yeah, I don't think we're gonna find an answer that quick. It's too obscure of a thing.
Yeah, the thing is, it's kind of everything else in there, from my limited understanding of television, is so dead on, detailed, accurate. Like, I don't know why they would do that.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't think it matters anymore. If it's a good show, it's a good show. I could probably if I'm suspending my statism already to watch it, I can suspend my news snobbishness as well.
Here's a comment. Whenever you hear Mac, Jim, Don, or any of the other nameless control room cast say SOT, please understand that somewhere I'm writhing in pain because in news, nobody, period, says nobody, period, says nobody, period, says SOT.
Well, there you go. I'm glad we have some cooperation.
Yeah, but that's some nobody. I mean, you know, fucking Aaron Sorkin. Who are we to tell Aaron Sorkin what to do? I guess that's what
we're
it is.
We're the fiends, man.
Okay.
We're the fiends.
You're right.
We can call it as we see it. People would say, who are you to tell Obama not to bomb Syria? Because Obama, man.
Because Obama.
That's what the fiends do. We yell at and ridicule people more powerful than us because that's what you do. Because
that's what you do. I know. Yeah. That's what you do.
Yeah. You know. We're not going to make fun of people who are less. I don't want to say lesser, but you don't want to pick on the weaker or the less powerful than you. You want to try to take down, and not in a crab mentality kind of way, but point out the inconsistencies of the people who are more powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my thing, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got a correction from last week. I said that Woody Allen's Bananas starred Diane Keaton as the social activist girl that Woody Allen's character is trying to impress by becoming a communist rebel. But it's not Diane Keaton. It's actually – she's played by Louise Lasser, who was Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. And you can say it now. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you already know.
That you don't know what that is.
That I don't know. Yeah.
She was kind of cute and hot in the 70s, and she actually plays an old lady in Requiem for a Dream. She plays Ada, who's one of the Jewish ladies that the hero's mother goes and hangs out with in front of the apartment building in lawn chairs.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, news you can not use.
Right. Yeah. So I put out a question last week of – who came up with the actual thing of, well, if you don't pay a law, if you don't obey a law or pay your taxes, they'll come to your house with a man with a clipboard. If you tell the man with the clipboard to go away, they'll send men with guns. If you tell the men with guns to go away, they'll come back with bigger guns and they'll kick in your door and put a gun to your head and put you in a cage or kill you. You know, that like libertarianism 101, newly minted libertarian explanation of how it works. And it's a great explanation. But I was wondering, because it's so ubiquitous, it's so – every anarchist says that at one point or another. You and I have said it many times. And we say it in the Guns and Weed movie, and everybody says it. And I wonder where it came from, because I know that that couldn't just spontaneously be without someone having – some great man or great woman probably having – had said it. Or I just think someone probably said it. And I was trying to figure out who. And Claire Wolf – told me she doesn't know, but it sounds like, and it would be a good bet that it was Carl Hess. And I looked him up. If anyone's more familiar with Carl Hess than we are, let us know. But Carl Hess, let's read a little bit about him, because he's an OOOG libertarian that died in 1994.
So Wiki
this picture,
says
this
he
picture
was,
of him, it kind of looks like from the movie Bananas with Woody Allen. It looks like he's got a beard and glasses and kind of looks
and,
like.
And there's columns there's, and palm trees and palm behind trees. Him.
I know. He looks like a dictator. You got to see that movie Bananas. I went and saw it the other day after we talked about it. I saw that and I saw Argo, and I do want to get to Argo. But Bananas is a funny, zany, stupid Woody Allen movie, probably from the 70s, that opens with. Who is that sportscaster from back in the 70s? I want to talk like this, kind of. You know,
Howard Cosell?
Yeah, it's Howard Cosell with a microphone in Central America where the ousted president of this banana republic is being shot by the military in a firing squad. And the children have all turned out and are cheering him on. And he's covering it like he's covering the Liston fight. It's pretty funny. And then at the end, the movie ends with him doing the same kind of coverage of the consummation of the couple's marriage in their bed.
That's kind of prescient, because that's one of the complaints I have about a lot of 24-hour news cycle coverage of politics, is they treat it like Scott Horton would say a horse race. But I would say, yeah, like any kind of sporting event, man, it's OK. Now Obama's walking up to the podium. He's got to make this case or else blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's really a sense that they're not really talking about
it's entertainment.
The morality,
it's
entertainment, or the philosophy. Yeah. But yeah, it's they're calling
it's
it like it's a play, like they're calling the plays of a football game. Things
yep,
like that.
Yep. Yeah, Woody Allen's a pretty smart guy. I mean, I have a lot of issues with him, but that's not one of them. He's smart.
Yeah, yeah. So, Carl Heiss, according to Wiki,
Hess.
Was an American Hess. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not Heiss. Carl Hess.
K-A-R-L. Yeah, Carl.
H-E-S-S.
That's why that makes him look even more commie that his name is K-A-R-L.
Yeah. But, yeah, was a national-level speechwriter and author, also a political philosopher, editor, welder. Welder, motorcycle racer, tax resistor, atheist, and libertarian activist. Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's
to
a
have,
resume. Yeah,
yeah, especially on your Wiki page.
Oh, and he lived in the Philippines. That's probably where that picture is taken with the column and the palm trees.
Oh, nice. Born in D.C., but then moved to the Philippines. Was he expatriated? Did he?
He was.
Himself?
He was a speechwriter for Barry Goldwater. Now, I have a theory that a lot of politicians, the things that they're most known for actually probably came from their speechwriters. That's definitely true of Nixon and Reagan.
It's true of the Axis of Evil. That was a Bush speechwriter thing.
Yeah, he wouldn't come up with something that cool, and he'd fuck it up if he didn't have a teleprompter.
And Syria was originally in the Axis of Evil, but then instead of looking like, okay, let's take out all of these countries in a line in the Middle East for Israel, all next door to each other, they threw in North Korea there, because they're like, everybody hates North Korea, and it'll make us look less like this is just a completely self-interested AIPAC thing.
Carl Hess is widely considered to be the author of the infamous Goldwater line: extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. But revealed that he had encountered it in a letter from Lincoln historian Harry Jaffa, and later learned it was a paraphrase of a passage from Cicero. But, you know, Barry Goldwater is considered the father, you know, like the spiritual grandfather of the Libertarian Party. And when I look at Goldwater's platform, I mean, really, he wanted to nuke Vietnam to end the Vietnam War. I mean, that's not very libertarian.
Was that just like a devil's advocate kind of argument, though? Or was he really serious?
Was he trying
to point out the absurdity of military action in other places? Like, well, if you're going to go murder a bunch of civilians, why not just nuke them? Kind of a thing? Like,
maybe.
Sarcasm?
I don't know. It's pretty fucked up to be sarcastic with that, if it's true. But
yeah.
Goldwater, yeah. DJ's father, I've said this many times, but DJ's father went door to door trying to get people to vote for Goldwater in 64, the year I was born. And when Goldwater lost, DJ's father was like, that's it, American politics are over. Because he believed, DJ's father believed, as many people believed, that Goldwater was ushering in this new age of politics. And a lot of it was because he kind of talked a libertarian talk. And, you know, the saying is, Goldwater didn't lose, he won, it just took 16 years, which is a reference to the fact that Reagan basically picked up Goldwater's torch and ran on the same kind of feisty small government talk. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, like, all of these and then like talk that talk, but didn't walk the walk. And all of these Republicans and conservatives who, you know, worship at the ghost of Ronald Reagan and invoke him as this great man, they're really invoking Goldwater, but they're really invoking this anarchist, Carl Hess. Think about that. Like, the anarchist speechwriter got watered down by the Republican libertarian, and that got watered down by the Republican libertarian to Reagan. And that's what people think of as the great man of Reagan. But really, I think that they're just praising the anarchist Carl Hess.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if we're talking about people who came up with things that then got watered down or co-opted, was Barry Goldwater's saying nuke Vietnam, did that lead to the people out there? And there's a lot of them, especially if you work blue-collar jobs in Texas or know people that do, there's a lot of people out there that
they
say things like,
nuke
let's,
things.
Just,
yeah,
let's nuke- just nuke the Middle East and extract all the oil and stuff
I
like
never
that.
Thought
I
about
wonder,
that.
I wonder if that comes from it.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm looking – maybe not because I'm looking at the wiki page right now for Goldwater. And apparently – he suggested that nuclear weapons should be treated more like conventional weapons and used in Vietnam, specifically that they should be used at Dien Bien Phu in 1954 to defoliate trees. So instead of using Agent Orange, he wanted to nuke the trees. He also had other other offhand comments like, quote, let's lob one into the men's room at the Kremlin.
Okay, so that sounds like feisty, you know, conservative flash. But the first part sounds like it was an actual plan and may either not an understanding of the power of nuclear weapons or he was talking about
using tactical
ones.
Yeah, yeah. He called them small conventional nuclear weapons, which is kind of – I mean, a conventional – it's either conventional or nuclear. It can't be both. But there is a thing called tactical nukes, and people think that that's what he was referring to.
Yeah, I used the phrase suitcase nuke jokingly in the last episode, and you said there's no such thing, and I looked it up. And when you search suitcase nuke on Wikipedia, it reverts to the tactical nuclear weapon page. There is no known nuke that could fit in a briefcase.
There's some that could fit in a car, like in if you stripped out the
there's some that you could carry
trunk.
On your back.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're tactical nukes. They're like
they level about four city blocks and contaminate half a county or a county. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
I thought those were they were unsure if they'd ever been tested and they were like formerly secret programs of the Soviet Union and the United States, right?
Let's see. I think they've actually been used. There is talk too that Israel has a suitcase nuke, but it's not proven. But yeah, there's nukes that a strong man could carry on his back. You know, they'd be about the size of a keg of beer and weigh a little more, probably.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. But something that would be obvious if they were walking down Times Square with it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not something you could fit in a briefcase and look like a businessman.
Right, right. Although a dirty bomb could fit in a briefcase. Mm. A dirty bomb being a conventional bomb with nuclear material to poison in an area.
Yeah.
God, man, governments are horrible. They really are.
Yeah, I mean, what do they do all day with the stolen money? Is they sit up there and they think of better ways of killing people and stuff that – you know, this is part of the thing about who is it? Hans Hermann Hoppe's argument about how, you know, in some senses, a monarchy can be better for a society than a democracy because the time preference is different. And people who are in a monarchy, the rulers have some sense of ownership of it and they want their heir to inherit it. And they have a long-term vision of what's to happen. But in a place where it's the leaders are in and out, you can have things that just destroy stuff for basically forever, like depleted uranium in Iraq, or even Agent Orange in Vietnam. There are still, you know, I think it was a few months ago, there were reports of another generation that's being born with birth defects from the chemical Agent Orange that was sprayed all over Vietnam to defoliate it, but also causes birth defects in humans. Same thing's happening in Fallujah right now with the depleted uranium. And depleted uranium, it's not just going to like go away or stop being contaminated. It's radioactive. You know, it has a half-life of like millions or billions of years.
Tactical nukes have been built and tested. I'm sending you a link for one right now.
I know tactical nukes have.
Well, tactical nukes being things that can be fired from a mortar shell.
Ah.
Fired from a mortar. I'm not talking
here we
like
go.
You know, basically two guys can parachute into some area, nuke it and somehow get out. I don't know if they could get out before it would kill them, but
let's see. Yeah, you sent me a link to a wiki entry for W-33, an American nuclear artillery shell fired from an 8-inch M-110 howitzer and M-115 howitzer. A total of 2,000 were produced. the first of which was manufactured in 1957.
That's not a shoulder
no
weapon. It's not huge. It's smaller than a, you know, minivan, but
a howitzer is big. A howitzer is bigger.
These two howitzers. Well, there's the M10-110. It's shown mounted on a tank, and the M115 is shown on its own on wheels, on four wheels. It basically looks. It says it was tested
twice in the 50s. So apparently it worked. Neither test, though, involved firing from an actual howitzer. They were test fired with a device hanging from a balloon at an altitude of 750 feet.
Where?
Probably in New Mexico. It doesn't say.
Man, New Mexico. All those mutated people grow into Jesse Pinkman, man. Fat man and little boy. You're fat man and you're little boy. Yes. Remember where they're meeting? Jesse's crew first meets Heisenberg, and they meet at the nuclear testing museum.
No, I don't. I'm going back through it, but I haven't come to that yet.
It's you've seen it. You probably saw it with me. In the first season. You know, it's where Badger and Skinny Pete go to meet meet Walt, because Jesse's in the hospital, I think, from getting beat up. By Hank, and they're like, "Are you the guy?" And he's like, "You know, it's right around the time that everyone thinks Jesse crushed someone's skull, and he's taking credit for it, and the streets are theirs."
Okay, and, yeah, I don't think that's the first season, but I think maybe I know the
second season.
About.
But they meet at the at an actual museum that exists that's for the nuclear tests, and on the wall there's a picture of Fat Man and Little Boy, which were the two bombs dropped in Japan. And the third guy, I forget his name, but the one that dies, points to Skinny Pete and Badger and says, "Fat man and little boy."
How sad is that there's these chunks of square mileage that are just dedicated to testing these awful, horrible weapons? I remember driving through New Mexico last summer when we were doing our freedom tour, me and the wife. You know, we had quit our jobs and we're moving back to Texas, but we figured we'd spend a month or two just tramping around the West. And there's a sign when you're driving through New Mexico about Alamogordo that's trying to say, "Hey, move to Alamogordo or visit Alamogordo. It's not contaminated at all." And I forget
Does
the wording.
Say that?
That was the gist of it, though. It's not contaminated at all. It was hilarious. And
I don't
know, man.
The half-life of plutonium or uranium is not very halved in the time it's been since those tests.
Yeah, but how much of it has been
blown around the country into Wyoming and Texas?
there you go. And then we went to White Sands. I think it's a national monument, or I don't think it was a national park, but it was some kind of national reserve. And they actually are only open on certain days, because certain days there is missile testing nearby. So we were lucky enough to arrive on a day when they weren't doing missile testing, and so we got to go and visit the – and it was – probably one of the most beautiful places I saw during that summer. And we went to some awesome ones, like hiking to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. But White Sands was just dunes as far as you can see, white sand dunes. And it looked like you were on a beach. It felt like you were on a giant beach.
Yeah, I remember you
no
talking
water.
About that when you came back from that.
Yeah.
Boy, this Carl Hess guy, man. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead. I really want to read some of his stuff. Read this thing I just sent you about his legacy. That he basically influenced both Ron Paul and the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently Reuters did an online op-ed recently with a throwback to him in 2012, according to Wiki. New Yorker Maureen – oh, man, I can't pronounce that – Chakik asserted that Carl Hess was the ideological grandfather of the anti-1% movement, making Hess the direct antecedent of thinkers like Ron Paul and both the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement. She cites the detailed argument Hess in his libertarian phase put forward in his book Dear America to delineate and decry the extreme concentration of power in the hands of a tiny financial and stockholding elite. Miss Chachik quotes passages from Hess's book to offer proof that Hess developed the language of the 1% versus the 99%, the former being those whose role, according to Hess, is demonstrably detrimental to the vast majority of Americans. So he might have coined the 1%.
I'm looking at this Reuters blog piece now. It's called The Radical Right-Wing Roots of Occupy Wall Street. That's pretty awesome. Huh, that's funny.
That's a good headline. Yeah. That makes you want to read it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's awesome as a headline, not... Boy, cool. Right-wingers.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you could call him right-wing. He seemed to have been kind of all over the map but on his journey but ended up anarchist, you know?
Yeah,
he was
which is why I'm still so the left-right paradigm just has no usefulness anymore, no political usefulness at all for actual talk of philosophy or what people want things to be like. And people on the left, people on the right will say if you go too far to the left, you're an anarchist. And people on the left say that about people on the right, but I don't think that's true at all. You go too far, then you're, Obama or – what's the other one? John McCain.
Well, apparently he got it right before he died, and he died in 1994. What were you doing in 1994?
Oh, man. I was a kid. I wasn't even in high school yet. I was middle school, man. I was listening to the Foo Fighters and wearing dog chains.
I was getting off heroin in 1994.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I did not have it right yet. It took me a while.
Yeah, man.
And it's hard to ever say that you've got it right because
no, I got it right.
Then you've given up today.
Every day it's right.
Well, you felt that when you were a lazy Democrat too, and you thought that only cops in the military should have guns.
Yeah, shut up, man. Let's go to the market.
Okay.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. Love The Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread The Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
So, Nima Vedati.
Yeah, what's up?
I've told you how I get the local Casper Tribune one day a week, even though I don't want to. They throw it. They fucking pollute on my yard. Yeah. I called them up and asked them not to. And they're like, well, we don't really have a list. Basically, it's like they have some stoned-looking hippie guy who just comes around and throws it.
Randomly?
He just looks like he couldn't remember what houses not to throw it on if they told him. But I was looking at it today, and they're trying a third time to push through a new library here for $80 gazillion. And it's been like voted down twice, and they're trying to get it on the ballot again for an initiative to add an extra cent of tax for like 2 years, which you know will never go away. But it's been the people have spoken, and they're still trying to do it again. Like, well, maybe if we get, here's what I'm wondering. I would love to see, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but I would love to see a detailed background check of the city council members and city manager and any of those politicians who are pushing this over and over and over year after year, and the people who replace them that are pushing it year after year. I would like to see if any of them have any financial thing to gain, or any family members work for any construction or anything like that that's going to make money off this. Because I just can't imagine that they would like risk their seat in politics after the people have said, no, fuck you, to like keep pushing it, you know?
I think what it is they have this paternalism about them, and they feel like it's what's best for our community, and they feel like that's their job, is to decide what's best for the community, and they lament the fact that they have to even go to the public for something like that. So I think that they're going to just try to keep repitching it and repitching it, and one day if it wins, they'll say, see, we told you so.
When you'd worked at the news station here, if you'd uncovered some story where somebody who was pushing something like that had some family member who was going to gain immensely financially from it, would they have let you do a story on that?
Yeah, I think so. If it was an obvious tie, I don't know. The thing with stuff like that is somebody might say, well, it's such a small town, everybody knows everybody anyway. It's not news. Yeah. But I don't know. It just depends on how how good you could make the story. If it was like somebody's wife or something, or they had some direct benefit from it, then maybe. But if it was like their cousin or something, probably not.
Yeah. You know, the Concord City Council voted 11-4 to go ahead and get their Bearcat from the DHS after like overwhelming complaints from the community. Concord, New Hampshire.
What happened? Oh, I know they got it anyway.
Yeah.
But did they bring it to town yet and do their puff piece with the media about how great this is?
No, they just officially applied for the money to get it. Stolen money to get it. But the funny thing is that the Free State Project Council of five voted to ban anyone from the New Hampshire City Council from ever joining the Free State Project.
That's not cool. I don't know about that, man.
I heard that somewhere. I don't even know if that's true. It might be a joke, okay. But it's pretty funny. Yeah. I think the Concord New Hampshire City Council would enjoy that.
That, and I think stuff like that is can be counterproductive. I guess having a five-person council who decides things like that is counterproductive too. But it seems like if your goal is to convince people and get them on your side, you wouldn't be exclusionary like that. I mean, what if somebody from the city council throws off all their, you know, steps off the dais and says, hey, I'm sick of being such a government stooge. I want to be a free stater. You know, you'd want to welcome him with open arms, right?
Well, they'd no longer be a member of the city council then, or would they? In your thought experiment.
I don't know. I guess I'd have to know more about what they banned. Like, did they ban active members, or did they ban anybody who's ever been a member of the city council?
I don't even know if it happened. I think it's someone's joke. Okay. Lou sent it to me, and I'm trying to get him on Pigeon and can't right now. But it's probably just a joke on the fact that they banned Christopher Cantwell for feisty talk.
Okay. We used to do a thing about great libertarian quotes. We haven't done that in a long time. But I did come across one on Lou Rockwell's blog. It wasn't something he said or anybody who writes from currently said, but it was something that was really stuck with me. And I think I'd like to read it.
Okay.
It's the title of the post is Nothing Has Changed in 100 Years. And it's not quite 100 years, but apparently somebody called Lloyd George, I don't know who that is, but in 1917 he said, the thing is horrible and beyond human nature to bear. He's talking about war. He said, if people really knew, the war would be stopped tomorrow. But of course they don't know. They can't know. The correspondents don't write, and the censors would not print the truth. And obviously he's talking about World War One back then, but the same still holds true today. And people like to say that, well, one of the reasons Vietnam ended eventually was because of the war coverage of it, and people actually showed the atrocities on TV. And I think ever since that, the Pentagon has had a let's never let that kind of thing happen again. And now whenever you see media coverage, you know.
Well, they basically say Art Linkletter ended the Vietnam War. I think that's kind of specious, but he seemed to have had something to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't like saying one person did something like that. Something like that's too huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's cutting out like the guy running the camera and the guy running the board and the executive producer and the, you know, the person who's brave enough to let him say it on the air.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the people protesting and the government officials that finally did give in, because they didn't have to give in eventually. You know, people like to say, too, that Bradley Manning helped, or they like to say Bradley Manning's leaks ended the Iraq War, and they did a lot to go towards that. I'm not trying to downplay that at all. But in the end, it was the people in Iraq saying, hey, we don't want you here anymore, and pressuring the politicians to not continue the status of forces agreement.
I wasn't laughing at the thought that he ended that war. I was laughing at the thought that ending a war ends war. I mean, you know, Obama's probably getting ready to walk up to the teleprompter right now to try to sell the American people on something they don't want to do, which is go kill more people somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't watch his speech last night because apparently he's going on his all violence all the time junket, and he's just going to be talking, trying to sell the war all day, every day until war were declared. Not really declared. That's obviously a figure of speech. And it's really sad how, you know, I follow some journalists on Twitter, and some of them were like live tweeting it, you know, like just tweeting it, but without any kind of follow up or comments, just quoting it like this is what Obama really believes. And we all know that he, you know, like when he's talking about Guantanamo, he'll say things about the horrible atrocities of force feeding prisoners inshore. With no irony on the fact that that's being done at his behest, and he's making the call for that to happen. And he said something in his Tuesday speech. I didn't confirm this, but this was what somebody live tweeted him as saying, that I'm here trying to end wars, not start wars. And there's no irony in the tweeter, no follow-up, and they had plenty more characters left to follow up on that. Mm-hmm. But how is he trying to end wars when he did an Afghan surge and threw 30,000 new soldiers in Afghanistan after he was elected and increased the drone bombings? Increasing drone bombings doesn't end wars. He started the war in Syria, or at least the American Western involvement in it. He spearheaded that. And now he's pushing so hard with all his might to try to get the Syria thing going. And people are saying maybe the Russian thing and the John Kerry gaffe is going to help him save face. But he seemed to have backtracked, and he still wants to push for something in Syria.
I just want to talk more about Carl Hess, man. I got to interrupt here. I've just found two amazing things about this guy. He was an editor at Newsweek, and he was fired for refusing to write an obituary on FDR. And when he was a kid, he believed, as his mother did, that public education was a waste of time, rarely attended school. To evade truancy officers, he registered at every elementary school in town and gradually withdrew from each one, making it impossible for authorities to know exactly where he was supposed to be.
Nice.
I just want to put that out there as a strategy. I don't know if that would work anymore because everything's all connected, but that's hilarious, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He also tried to do – he did an experiment in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. It's a neighborhood where I used to live, which was when I lived there, it was a horribly crack neighborhood. It was like dangerous and violent. I lived at Belmont and 15th Northwest across the street from Malcolm X Park. You know, anywhere you live in America, there's a joke that some black comedian says that's pretty much true, that anywhere in America, if you're anywhere near Martin Luther King Boulevard, you're in a bad neighborhood. Okay, this was Malcolm X Park. That's like exponentially going to be worse and more radically violent than. But he did an experiment in early black. He was an early proponent of Back to the Land movement, focusing on self-reliance and small communities. And when the Internal Revenue Service confiscated his property and put a 100% lien on his future earnings, he existed on bartering his work for food and goods.
100% lien on his future earnings?
Yes.
That's a thing?
That was.
They can do that?
Man, that would make anybody anarchist. But basically, yeah. It sounds like he became an agorist before there was a term for that. He probably influenced the guy, Konkin, who came up with agorism.
Yeah. I still don't like the term agorism for agorism.
I don't either. Yeah.
It's too statist.
Yeah, and he also made friends in the New Left and was friends with the editors and a lot of readers of the Whole Earth Catalog and Mother Earth News. And I like the Whole Earth Catalog. That was the hippie book that told you to build geodesic domes and buy rifles and move out to the land that I read when I was 10. Made me like the idea of, you know, that's why I love that we're on a radio show where the ads are bulletproof vests and health food, because I read the Whole Earth Catalog as a kid.
Have bulletproof vests in the Whole Earth Catalog?
No, but, I also got that idea from the fact that my sister dated a guy who was a recently returned Vietnam vet who was a vegan who did, you know, 300 sit-ups every morning and looked like Jesus, like, but totally buff, and had long hair and smoked pot and had a rifle in the back of his car and was a total hippie. And I loved that he had a rifle.
You were missing the no homo in that paragraph.
I know. I don't know, man. He was probably my first man crush. But, But I was thinking, I missed a joke the other day when I was saying, you know, I like that we're on a radio show where the ads are bulletproof vests and health food, because, you know, I like guns and I like protection, and I like caring about what goes into me, you know, meaning good food. And then I was thinking, like, yeah, and what doesn't go into me, which is why bulletproof vests are good, because I don't want bullets going into me. They're unhealthy.
They are, yeah. Well, there's lots of crossover, and this is one of the reasons my wife has pretty much converted, is because when you really think of what's good for you as a human being, you can't help but realize that the state is not good for your health in any way, shape, or form. Whether it's the food that they want you to eat, or the things that they want you to do, or the regulations and restrictions they put on you doing things for yourself, like growing your own food or raising your own chickens or whatever the case is, the state wants you to fit into the mold they want you to be in. And oftentimes that's at odds with what people decide is in their best interest. So if you're into health of yourself and health of the environment, it's not hard to find the crossover between anti-statism and that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, man. The 1% aren't that. It's like Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party movement have the same background, you know? Think about it.
Yeah. Of course, the crossover and the distinction comes when you start to use the state. Because if that's what we're talking about here, that sours the water or sours the milk, I guess, then if you use the state to try to impose your hippie or food or whatever philosophy it is, then it's the same thing. Because other people might not decide that kind of stuff's in their best interest. And even if they're wrong or you think they're wrong, you have no right to decide how they live their lives, whether that's through you committing violence on them yourself or getting a proxy, i.e. the state, to do it.
I think maybe instead of calling this episode Obama Gonna Buy Me a War, which is really negative and funny, I think I want to call it Because Carl Hess, That's Why.
Okay.
And I'll use this picture of him where he looks like Castro.
Yeah. Is there any video of him giving speeches or audio?
I don't know, man. Like that stuff's harder to find from back then, because there wasn't a recorder in everyone's phone and a way to share it to the world on everyone's phone. Chromed robot turds. You know what we should talk about sometime is the history of the tablet, the history of the handheld computer, because they tried back in the day. And it wasn't quite there yet. You remember the Newton? Do you remember the Apple Newton?
I don't remember the Newton. No.
Newton was a handheld device that used a stylus pen, you know, like doesn't write, but you write on it and it recognizes. And you had to use like a special form of No, you didn't. Because actually the handspring, you had to use something called graffiti, I think. Or maybe that was the Apple one. But graffiti was a style of writing letters that you had to learn so it would recognize it. Like you had to write your letters backwards and funny and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's actually a Simpsons where they make fun of the Apple Newton because one of the bullies has an Apple Newton and he's like, take a memo, beat up Martin. And he writes beat up Martin on it. And then it changes to like what it recognizes it at. And it says eat up Martha.
Yeah, kind of like how I used to think dragon speech recognition was, but apparently it's come a long way.
Oh, it's come a long way. I wrote an article for Talkers with it and it was almost flawless. Yeah.
Apparently, the development of the Newton started in 87. So, yeah, that is pretty early.
But, in 90 or 91, maybe it was 93, there was a store in downtown San Francisco called the Newton Store. Talk about betting your whole – and it failed. And I was like, that's going to fail. And it failed. Like, talk about betting your whole thing on one pony, you know, that isn't quite ready to run yet.
Putting all your eggs in one Batman, as I like to say.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I came across via Frank, my little brother who lives in Houston and is he does cop watching there, although much less so now that he's working a lot harder.
Got a girlfriend,
yeah. He had one before. It's just now they live together and he's got a job up north in North Houston. A really interesting article on alternate.org with some I didn't realize – I knew Houston cops were bad, but I didn't realize it was this bad. And the most relevant factoid I pulled out from reading it was between 2007 and 2012, which I guess are the last 5 years where data is available, there were 550 people and animals shot to death by cops in Houston. And this is just HPD, so I don't know if I don't think that includes like the sheriff's department of Fort Bend County and what's the main county in Houston? I forget. But the number of cops disciplined in any of these incidents, these 550 incidents, was zero. And the writer of the article at Alternet says, so either every one of those shootings was completely justified with no questions to be asked, or HPD is just operating with complete impunity. And 550, that's a big number. And, you know, I'm used to doing a news reporting in places like Casper where there's only 7 regular homicides in a year. And so an officer-involved shooting maybe comes around once every 10 years or 5 years or something like that. But in Houston, 550. And that just blew my mind. How at what point do people – does the average person, I'll say, because you know people like me and you and a lot of people out there are getting this now. But at what point does the average person realize that the bad guys are the state's enforcers? You know, what's the threshold? Because it seems like them ending 550 lives in 5 years and having no punishment whatsoever – that's a threshold right there, you know.
If a gang was doing that, like a non-police gang were doing that, they'd be public enemy number one, and they'd be allocating drones and millions of dollars to stop them.
Right.
You know, I was
right.
thinking about police brutality, and I was thinking about this film called Police State. It's a short film by Nick Zed, who's a filmmaker who kind of inspired me to take up film. Like I got into, you know, doing video, digital video before anybody I know, basically, and did stuff on Super 8 before that. And he was doing stuff on Super 8 like 10 years before that. Police State was made in 1987. It's a short film. You could probably watch it on YouTube. Go look for Nick Zed, Z-E-D-D, Police State. It's an awesome film in a couple ways. One is Nick Zed plays the victim of the abusive police in it. And he had a friend of his who's an actor just literally beat the shit out of him for like 5 minutes. Like there's no acting in it. He's just beating him up in a, you know, what looks like a police station. It's also interesting in that I learned something about it, about set design that I've always thought is important. And we use this a lot in The Fiends in Guns and Weed. And I never even talked to you about it. It's just instinctively how I do stuff. If you have no budget, don't try to make a room actually look like the police station or whatever you're trying to make it look like.
Because you're gonna fail.
Right, right. If you have tons of money, do it right, you know, and have people who can build sets and stuff and make it look real. But if you have no money, don't try to spend some money and make it look real. Just pretend you're doing a play. Because on a play,
bare set,
like you just, a card table becomes a policeman's desk. A card table with a telephone on it becomes a police station. And that's how he did this. And that's where I got the knowledge to do that was from Nick Zed. He's mentioned actually in the movie Pulp Fiction, when the hero comes back with the motorcycle after getting, you know, after killing the guy that was trying to rape him. And his girlfriend says, "Where'd you get the motorcycle?" And she's like, "Got it. It's Zed's." And she's like, "Who's Zed?" And he said, "Zed's dead," which is a joke because Film Threat magazine did a fake obituary of Nick Zed at some point. And I interviewed him for the book $30 Film School, and my editor cut it out because it was so outrageous and like, fuck the system, that they just couldn't print it.
What?
And I felt really bad about it. Nick Zed hates my fucking guts because I let my editor do that. But it was my first book. Mm. I didn't have a choice. It was like, you know, give up this book and not get the interview in, or do the book and put the interview on my website, which I did. But there's two other things that are really cool about that film. One is that the opening credits of it are Nick Zed walking up to a police car, and you know, it says police, New York City police or whatever, and police is in big letters on it. And Nick Zed pulls out a spray paint can and paints the word state under the word police on the police car. And he's actually defacing a police car and filming himself doing it. And he's such a, you know, punk that he did that and got away with it.
That's awesome.
The other thing that's really interesting about it, I thought about all that stuff a lot before and have written extensively about it. But the thing that I didn't really think about is it's kind of the only film I've ever seen where the cops are beating somebody up and that's the whole story. Like, you see that a lot in mainstream, you know, Hollywood movies, but there's always an inquiry and an outrage and something changes because this couple police were bad. But the reality is more, and there should be more movies like this where there's just a plot point of some people walking down the street, they get the shit beat out of them by cops and then they go on their way. Cause that's pretty much what happens every day. And you never see that in film, man. You never see that.
Yeah. Well, that goes exactly back to this article. The headline is "Cops are beating up an unarmed suspect almost every day in Houston," and the writer is Emily DePrang. And this actually appeared in the Texas Observer, which is a pretty reputable Texas news outlet. And she personalized it through a guy who was on his way home. He was like 2 minutes away from home when he saw the red lights, and he decided, well, I'll just drive home anyway because it's just right down the road, and then I'll get out and do the thing. But in that 2 minutes, or maybe it was 2 miles, I don't remember. I guess that's a big difference. But on his way home, it ended up being 10 cops following him. And as soon as he got out, he put his hands up. They had the guns pointed at him. The cops put their guns back down and just rushed him. And 10 cops just wailed on the guy, according to his story. And they were yelling out things like, put your hands behind your back, put your hands behind your back. But he says his hands were being stepped on. You know, he couldn't put his hands behind his back. And she ends up interviewing a guy who remains anonymous, but is currently, she says, the writer of the article says, currently working for Houston Police Department. He says, yeah, that's about right. You know, they yell things like that just in case there's somebody filming so that it looks more credible after the fact, even if the person has just become a habit.
Or especially if no one's filming and there's just someone hears it and doesn't see it.
Yep. You know? He also says that they'll let everybody get their licks in. So every cop that's there, it's kind of become a cultural norm for HPD that they let every cop who's there get a few hits on the person that they're beating. It's not that they take turns, but if somebody didn't get it yet, they'll say something like, "Don't put the handcuffs on. Don't put the handcuffs on yet." Because apparently once the handcuffs are on, you know, you're less likely to be able to wail on this guy because he can still say he's resisting. And that's the other thing they yell at is, "Stop resisting." And obviously he's not resisting because he's laying on the ground getting turned into a bloody pulp.
I've heard an ethical variation on that, which is in Massad Ayoub's – is that his name? Massad Ayoub? In one of his books, and he's a former cop who writes good books on self-defense. He suggests that if you're ever in a self-defense situation where you have to shoot somebody to keep from getting killed – and it's not the kind of neighborhood where you can just sit there and call 911 and wait for the cops. Like, basically, if his buddies are ready to kill you or something, you know, but you can get away, you can jump in a car or something. as you're driving off, yell out your window. He suggests to yell out your window, somebody call an ambulance, because then maybe some good citizen will hear you saying that and it'll look less like you fled the scene of a crime. And he does suggest like driving to a safe area and then calling 911 and telling them what happened. But you know, don't, that's something to think about too, that a lot of people don't. If you're ever in a self-defense situation, it might not behoove you to sit there and wait for the police, even if you're planning on calling the police. And I'm not giving legal advice. I'm just saying what this cop says in his book, former cop.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even want to go into legal advice for there, but I guess the other thing to think about is, what do you do in that kind of a heat of a moment? Even if you've heard these things or read Masoud Ayoub's books or something like that, you kind of revert to whatever works for you. And you might forget stuff like this. I mean, people forget stuff every day. You know, sometimes I forget to bring my headphones to work, you know, stuff like that. If it's a situation where it's the heat of the moment, you might forget to yell out the window about the ambulance.
Yeah, the thing I've heard is that in a self-defense shooting situation, everybody reverts to their lowest level of training that they're very competent at. You know,
right.
Like if you're a great trick shooter when you're relaxed and can, you know, line stuff up and whatever. But when someone's trying to kill you, you're going to revert to like point, shoot, you know, front sight only. What you can do in your sleep, you know, you're going to revert to that basically. And that might also be true for what you do after, which probably could play to going through scenarios like this in your mind. You know, a lot of gun grabbers think, oh, gun people sit around and fantasize about getting to shoot somebody, but it's probably more like gun people sit around and consider scenarios, you know, how would I do this? So they have some mental training. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you could even like,
well, they visualize it like they train athletes to do, you know, visualize catching that pass, visualize making that field goal. I mean, that's just what you do in case a situation like that arises.
Yep. Well, I got nothing else. Do you got anything else? I mean, I got a lot more, but we'll save it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I think I'm good to go. I don't have a kicker or a unicorn chaser. So we kind of ended it on some tyranny. Do you have anything lighthearted to leave the audience with?
Enjoy playing golf in the Bahamas because Obama this weekend. Ben Stone's going to be filling in
because
for Nima
Obama
for Saturday and Sunday. This fiend.
Yes, I definitely appreciate it, Ben. I needed that. I'll put it that way.
Well, he's coming back early from his vacation to do it.
Oh, don't tell me that. I didn't have to do that. Are you serious?
Maybe by a day. Yeah.
No. Okay. Well, he gets to take vacations all the time. So
he lives vacations.
He lives vacations.
He and his wife
and he should. It's
drive
his time
around
to
the
do
country
that.
Solving mysteries.
Yeah, that's what me and the wife did last summer, and it was a blast.
Yeah.
Maybe one day after our kids are grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, worms. Brother man, worms
and peace.
Yeah.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.